John Hansen in for John Williams. When I got in this morning, I had no idea that I'd end up getting to chat with someone I've always wanted to chat with. Pete turned around and said, "You want to chat with Doris Kearns Goodwin?" And I said, "Absolutely. What a thrill." Noted historian, author. She's speaking tonight at NEIU, next Tuesday, and we'll get all the details of that in a moment. Doris Kearns Goodwin, it's an honor to chat with you. Thanks for joining us.
I'm very glad to be with you, John, here in Providence.
It's a thrill. You'll be chatting again Tuesday, September 17th at 7:30 p.m., neiu.edu/tickets. You'll be talking about the current presidential race, but you'll also be chatting a lot about your book, An Unfinished Love Story, A Personal History of the 1960s. Was it hard to inject yourself in writing about yourself and your late husband as you opened up the time capsule of the 1960s?
It really turned out to be a great adventure. I had no idea, however, how emotional it would be. And what had happened is my husband had saved 300 boxes, crazily, right, through our entire married life. They dragged around with us, and they really were, as you say, a time capsule of the 60s, because he worked for JFK, he was close to Jackie Kennedy, he worked for LBJ, he was with Bobby Kennedy when he died, so he's sort of everywhere in the 60s that you want to be. But he wouldn't open the boxes for all these years, because the 60s had ended so sadly, with the death of Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King and the riots in the streets, that he just said, "I just want to look forward, not backward." Finally, when he turned 80, he came down the stairs singing Oklahoma. He said, "Okay, time, now or never, if I have any wisdom to dispense, now start dispensing." So we spent every weekend of the last years of his life going through the boxes chronologically, as if we didn't know the sadness that would come later. And it turned out it was an extraordinary decade, filled with idealism and lots of positive things in addition to the sad things that happened. So it kept my husband going in those last years of his life.
It's an unfinished love story, a personal history of the 1960s. Ms. Kearns Goodwin, I feel like we are often looking back at the 1960s, comparing it to the tumultuous decade or so that we're living in now. Is that a fair comparison? Do you think people just are grasping at anything to know that we're going to get through this? Do you think that's what people are doing?
Well, you know, I think if they are doing that, it's a healthy thing. History can give us a sense of hope and solace, because we've been through really, really tough times before, even rougher than this one. And we got through the Civil War, we got through the Great Depression, we got through the early days of World War II, and we got through the 1960s that emerged with greater strength. But it does seem amazing, as we've gone through this election year, that so many things from the 60s became relevant. I mean, when Biden was considering whether to withdraw from the race because of the debate and people's worries that he would not be able to carry the ticket well, similarly, Lyndon Johnson had withdrawn from the race in March 31st of 1968, and he was able, when he withdrew, to have enormous editorials saying he'd put principle above politics, and he really looked like he might be able to bring the war in Vietnam to an end as a result. It didn't work out that way, but nonetheless, it was the right thing for him to do, as it was for Biden. So people started talking about that. Then come the Democratic convention, and people worried that there might be violence, as there was in 68, because of the protesters that were there in 68 and the protesters who would be there for the Palestinian movement in this election. Luckily, it didn't turn out to be a violent one. But there's always echoes in history, and that's what I love to be able to talk about when I'm on television. It's not so much the pundit of what's happening or what's going to happen, but what does this reflect about the past?
Yeah, I often wonder, and I do agree, I find solace in looking back and reading books about the Civil War. Obviously, you wrote the book about LBJ and got to know him before he passed. But do you often wonder what is going to be the thing to get us back to solid ground? As I imagine a lot of people, you know, maybe you don't even know you're back on solid ground till you look back. But I don't know if we're there yet. And I don't know what the thing will be to bring us back.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really important point that you're making, because it seems when you're in it, you don't know how it's going to end. I mean, the people living through the Depression or the early days of World War II didn't know the Allies were going to win the war, the Depression would come to an end. Like, we don't know how this chapter will end. What we do know is that what has brought us together in the past are things where people can work together across parties, across sections. Unfortunately, we hope it doesn't have to be a war that does that. I mean, isolationism was a pretty strong divider in the late 1930s. And once Pearl Harbor came, people pulled together. Business was against Roosevelt. Once Pearl Harbor came, the two of them, business and government, were able to work together to produce the enormous numbers of weapons and ships and planes and tanks we needed. So sometimes I think if we could only replicate by having a gap year for kids when they come out of high school, where they'll go to a different part of America, the country kids go to the city kids go to the country, from the east to the west, and have a common mission to work on, whether it's, you know, it's some sort of disaster relief or teaching other people how to read or working with kids who need help, and they come from different parts and they learn about each other. That's a way of starting. It's only a small thing to start, but we've got to figure out ways that we can see each other as common American citizens rather than as the other. That's what Teddy Roosevelt warned about at the turn of the 20th century, that if you start seeing each other as the other, then that's when American democracy will be at issue.
I often look to the Roosevelts for guidance, which seems like a strange thing to say, but you have Franklin and you have Teddy from two different parties who were also born into extreme wealth, ultimately both kind of coming to represent the common man. And I think that you mentioned that gap year. I mean, Teddy, they didn't call it a gap year then, and his was brought on by the death of his wife and his mother on the same day. But was it their lived experiences of meeting the common man and living with the common man that made them the presidents they were?
That's a great question. I think it absolutely was. I mean, for Teddy, you know, had he not lost his wife and mother, he would have stayed on the East Coast, but instead he went to the Dakotas to a ranch, and he lived there for 2 years. And during those 2 years, he was with ranchers, he was with cowboys, he was with woodsmen, people that he normally wouldn't have known in his privileged life. And then when he goes into the military service of the Spanish-American War, he brings all those people together under the Rough Riders umbrella. So there's Yale yachtsmen, there's Harvard people, and there's woodsmen and ranchers and wranglers. And then he brings that feeling for the whole country. He said, actually, he probably never would have become president if he hadn't lived in those years in the West, because the West and the East were so divided, and he would have been looked at as a privileged dude from the East. So I think that's the great thing about politics when it works right, is that you do get to see all different constituencies, even in your own district, presumably, if you do it right and you go out among them and you try and listen and feel what they're feeling and think what they're thinking.
I think a lot of conversation this year has been obviously about President Biden's legacy, and that will split people down the middle. I know that. But a lot of progressives or people on the left say he's been the most progressive president since ... They fill in the blank, and then they go to usually LBJ. Are we getting a little bit different side of LBJ, even though it's been so long since his presidency and his passing, that maybe he deserved a relook at what he did?
Absolutely. In fact, historians have already begun moving him up in the historian polls. You know, in several of the polls, he's sometimes 10. One recent poll, he was actually 8, and then John Kennedy was 9. That would have made LBJ very happy had he known that.
Yes.
One thing is, as the war recedes, it will never not be a scar on his legacy, but people are realizing how many of the programs that he instituted with the help of the civil rights movement during the Great Society are still changed our lives today, whether it's the Civil Rights Act ending segregation or voting rights or fair housing or Medicare or aid to education, immigration reform, NPR, PBS. I mean, every part of our lives is still influenced by what happened during that 1960s spurt of legislation. And he was the master at bipartisanship. I mean, we could certainly use that today, if only he could come back and figure out how to tell us how to do that again.
It's an unfinished love story, a personal history of the 1960s. Can't wait to read it. NEIU.edu/tickets if you're interested in hearing Doris speak next Tuesday night at 7:30 p.m. Doris Kearns Goodwin, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. I'm so glad we could talk together.